Today's program was brought to you by Patina Events at Brooklyn Botanic Garden, an idyllic location for weddings, corporate events, and parties of any style. Visit us at patinaevents.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, we're celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Good morning. What's that smile, Patrick?
He's happy.
He's happy.
Everything's good.
Look at you. It's sunny. The graffiti tour is going by with like 30 people.
We're on the graffiti
tour. In the midst of 10 years of Heritage Radio. They say the radio station that brings you behind the scenes in food. And then there's this show that brings you into the dirty bathroom. Really shows you what's up.
We're the variety show.
I think that's true. We even, as co-hosts, we even like to take pictures, you know, with our guests
in the bathroom.
We had one this year where we did that.
We dig deep. Yeah, we're like comedians, you know, they dig deep to be funny.
So in case you didn't know, this is the Main Course OG. I am here in studio with my beautiful co-hosts, Patrick Martins and Brandon Hoy.
And let me tell you, he is just really glowing today.
Sexy.
Are you pregnant?
No.
You do have that glow about you,
Do we have
Patrick.
Eric? Eric always looks beautiful.
I'm here, and my beautiful voice is on the line.
How many layers of flannel are you wearing? Tell me when to stop. Two,
oh,
three,
it's gonna be,
four.
It's going to be a warm one.
Five.
It's going to be a warm one.
So
I just
three.
Have one.
Oh, just one.
We're supposed to like get up to 100 degrees in the Inland Valleys on Friday out here. So, yeah, we're having a bit of a heat wave.
Have you premiered your show with Brian?
Not yet. We're still trying to. We're planning to get started early October with like recording parts of it.
What's the first episode?
Well, we're gonna start with some. Well, actually, we're gonna start with the founding of San Francisco and why the year 1776 is important to the West Coast too. And it doesn't actually have to do with George Washington sleeping anywhere.
Can we get a sneak peek? What was 1776 out on the West Coast?
1776. Actually, you can call that the birth date of San Francisco. The founding of the site of San Francisco was in 1776.
There was one hippie in 1776.
Yeah, right.
He's
one
still there.
Mexican hippie. Yeah,
under a bench.
Yeah, doing his thing.
I'll tell you one thing. He wasn't making soap.
Definitely.
Hey, you guys,
not.
I heard we have a guest here from my great home state of New Jersey.
He's going to come in for the weekly based in a couple minutes, but
we like to bring in Jersey guests for you, Eric. Makes you feel a little bit more connected to us. Otherwise,
really?
You know.
Oh. I'm touched.
Yeah, for sure. We know you like to talk about pork roll and the Jersey Shore and the Asbury Park Press.
So Brandon brought up the anniversary of Heritage Radio, 10th anniversary.
Yeah, congratulations.
So we just added on four or five people. I added Steve Jenkins on, Miriam Burrows, who wrote that seminal article in the New York Times about Heritage Turkeys, which started Heritage Foods. And of course, and I think Brandon, you know her, Ariane Batterbury, who's Michael Batterbury's wife. She's a widow now. And she actually, from Food Arts and Food and Wine, two magazines that she founded, introduced us to Katie Kiefer and Dave Arnold, came to the show through the Batterbury family. She's still with Food Arts. But just real part of the history. And by the way, they were friends with James Beard, best friends with them and all that. And she took, came all the way to Brooklyn.
Why don't you explain to our listeners what you brought them into?
I was about to say the same thing.
Because we just had a conversation about how we bring people into the dirty bathroom, and I don't want them to be mistaken
to think
that like you just brought them into the dirty bathroom. What exactly did you bring them into?
What have they been nominated or inducted into?
The Hall of Fame, which is a group of 500 of the most important visionary people who've ever been in the station. Come into the studio at Roberta's, and it's a place to honor them. So there's like a pantheon on the website of these 500 people, and it lists all the shows they've ever been on. Now, you just nominated two because it's almost the end now.
So it's the end, and in honor of the Heritage Radio Network's 10th anniversary gala, which is on Monday, November 11th at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden, everyone has sort of pre-nominated their last few people for the year. And this way, so that's why Patrick put in so many this week, as did I. I nominated on behalf of the whole network Lydia Bastianich, who is the great matriarch of the Bastianich family.
Yes.
And then we also put in Eric Asimov, the chief wine critic for the New York Times. So
he's been on a few times and was always very supportive. He was always like, I think what you guys are doing are great.
And he told me he'd come back on. So we're going to have him on the main course OG this fall for sure.
They're adding Wendell Berry, who came into Brooklyn. And he doesn't like cities, he always says, but he came all the way here. He was sitting here. I came and said hello. I forget whose show it was on. But they just added him on. So yeah, some heavy hitters. I think the heaviest hitters in the food world have all been here in the past.
And I believe
years.
Everyone's, you know, encouraged and invited to come to the gala. So actually, tickets are available at heritageradionetwork.org/gala.
Nobody asked who I nominated.
Oh, who did you nominate?
Oh, I didn't know you nominated.
Guy Fieri.
Oh, nice. Oh, yeah. He was here with Mario. Yeah.
Did he accept?
Very cool.
No, I guess you don't really have to accept
really
to be inducted.
And do you remember when Davia Nelson brought, she's in Fargo. What is her name? Lovely actor, actress. She was in Fargo.
Man, I know exactly who you're talking
McDermott.
About.
McDermott?
Yeah.
Laura.
No.
Michael.
She was in Fargo. She was the cop. Then she won an Oscar for the Five Signs movie.
Mm-hmm.
Frances McDormand.
Francis, there we go. Good.
Thanks,
there
Matt.
You go, Matt.
She's
Matt's on fire today.
Was that the quick Google, or you just is that your favorite movie?
I was waiting you guys out to see if you figured it out yourself.
She came. She was here. I mean, real awesome.
I love it. I love that I don't know. It's a shared space. Everybody's sort of in the same platform when they come in here, and obviously we're always honored to have big names, but I don't know.
Well, we got a new guest in here. Do we want to?
Yeah, for sure.
Do this.
So, I was going to first ask you about why you're going to Gowanus after the show.
I am going to Gowanus. Beautiful Gowanus.
You're dumping
too.
A few things.
Yeah, I have a lot of 50-gallon drums filled with just weird stuff.
Oil.
Yeah, oil, please. That's not even weird enough. Trust me, I got some weird stuff in these drums.
And I'm just going to
pull up in my Chevy truck and just kind of just kick them out with my foot out the back. Why not?
Ann and I play a game of things we would see coming down the Gowanus Canal that we would not go get.
Like that you would not
Holy
save.
Holy Grail. Oh. You know, we would be like, nah, it's all right. The Holy Grail.
Like a canoe full of gold. You'd just be like, you know what? I'm just going to let that pass by.
Our kids. We would go in for our kids. That's
now,
it.
Do you feel the same way about the Hudson River?
No, I'd swim in the Hudson River.
Would you?
People swim in the Hudson River.
Hudson River's got some pretty clean parts.
It's a river. It's moving. It's not a staid body of water.
All right. I mean, I've been dying to take jet skis
on the Hudson or the East River. The Gowanus is pretty gross, but the Newton Creek or the Newtown Creek?
Yeah.
People die just by living near there.
Yeah, totally. So you could, like, the fumes, like, burn your eyes.
It's really unfair that those companies did that to that community. I mean, people have high cancer rates there.
Well, I want to welcome our special guest who's here for the Weekly Based with us this week. We have Chef Matt Ruzga of the Fox and Falcon in South Orange, New Jersey. I was going to sort of segue,
Jersey,
you know.
House. We doubled down on New Jersey today.
We've got Eric Koss on the line, who grew up in New Jersey and is now out in Alameda. But I was going to say, I mean, you know, people talk a lot of shit about New Jersey and
of course.
You know,
it's always
but also I think we
state.
We know one thing about people on this. Like, people are stupid. That's why we're here on this show, right? To expose people.
Because we require stupid people to listen.
I mean, our whole customer base has to be stupid, right?
Ignorant or stupid, one of the two.
Matt, are you originally from New Jersey?
Yes, born and raised Freehold, New Jersey.
Wow.
Yes.
And now you're back to your Jersey
home
roots.
Of the boss.
Oh, really? Does
the
he still live there?
Boss. No, I think he lives in Colts Neck.
Okay.
Yes, I think that's
massive
right.
Massive ranch or something. I don't know.
Colts Neck is like the home of the
you
horse farm.
You would see him downtown, Freehold, just walking around.
I'll tell you, one of my best memories of when I first moved to New York, it had to have been like 2001. There was a bar in Soho called M'Lady's, and it was close to where I worked at the Thompson Hotel. And I was there just having a Budweiser with the chef, and it was just me and chef. And the boss just came and sat right next to us and fucking ate a hamburger, but just like devoured it, like ketchup everywhere. He was just like, he didn't care at all. He just like came, sat down, just like smashed a hamburger and a beer and was like, cool, I'm out. It was it was impressive.
Well, I mean, it was also pre-social media, so he had
way before
no risk of someone, you know, spotting him looking like shit.
He didn't care.
Yeah.
He also strikes me as that guy, and I'm exactly the same way. I aspire to be like him if he is like this. You know, that 1%, all the boards of directors, the Goldman Sachs people, they're very wealthy. They're very successful. Their house filled with art, and yet I could not want to hang out with them less and talk about those things in those ways and all that stuff. I would much prefer to be with the carpenters, the workers, the chefs, the people in the basements, and I just feel more comfortable. I feel there's less pretense and there's less performance maybe of trying to be a certain way.
That's why people identify with him.
Yeah, he was the voice of those people. And I think he was in touch with that. He was in touch with that feeling, and he understood what these people's struggles were. And he had a way to like kind of summarize it, distill it, and give it back to the people. And those people loved him forever for it.
There's that movie out right now, right? That he actually influenced somebody in India or something like that, and like totally changed his life. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that was a movie.
People identify with his message everywhere.
I wonder if he agreed with the making of that movie or if he appears
in it. I like that. Patrick's like, that was a movie,
No,
did it go straight to VHS?
It's
out
right now, I think.
Went straight to Airplane. I don't think they made VHS.
Oh, wow.
But
all right, we're going to jump into our segment, The Weekly Based, and we always open this with our round-robin question. Speaking of burgers, Brandon, good segue. Next Wednesday, the 18th of September, is International Cheeseburger Day. Woo! In honor of this very important day, we have a juicy question for you. What's your best hamburger? Lowbrow, highbrow, meat, toppings? How do you do it?
Am I starting on this?
Sure, Brandon.
Hey,
go for
it. I'm from California, so I like a thin patty, like
In-N-Out.
I love In-N-Out. That style of hamburger, I don't want to say that's the best one, but I like that style of hamburger.
Mm-hmm. My favorite burger is PJ Clark's, the one on 53rd and 3rd. Love it.
Chef Matt? Which is thick, meaty.
I like the meaty burger.
I'm into the thick and meaty.
I think I need a nice 8-ounce patty.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, for sure.
So where do your favorite? Do you make a burger at Fox and
Falcon? We do make a burger, and we sell a million of them.
So what is it? Brisket? Is it your own thing?
We get it from Plymouth, so they're patted already. 8-ounce Cabot. Cheddar, lettuce, tomato when they're in season.
Mm-hmm. I saw you put pickles as a standard.
Pickles from the Pickle King in Patterson, New Jersey. Nice. He calls himself.
I'll tell you one thing about hamburgers, though. I have not met a burger that I didn't like. So that I say that I like the thin patty doesn't exclude the fact that just sounded delicious. I love hamburgers. Like,
me
it
too.
Is,
favorite
it is
food.
One of,
yeah. I don't like tomatoes on burgers most of the time because I feel the wetness, juiciness bleeds into the meat.
And they slide out, too. If there's lettuce, it just...
How do you feel about
very thin
bacon on a burger?
Not necessarily if it's a great burger.
All right.
Yeah, definitely not.
But
not
I love
required,
onion.
But, I'd definitely start with a patty of Hearst Ranch beef, I would think, you know? And
look at this
put that
shameless
on the grill
self-promotion here.
You're a real man of the people.
Sorry, I don't know where that came from.
You're real.
Those burgers are damn good.
Bruce Springsteen of the burger.
You're really
world.
Tempting the New Yorkers, who I'm pretty sure cannot get a hold of a Hearst Ranch.
Will you buy a Vanderbilt burger also in an emergency?
Exactly.
A Carnegie?
Wait, and So for me, I used to like my burgers rare. I've definitely moved more to that like medium rare, maybe even medium depending
even
on where
I'm at.
Even a well-done
burger is good.
Okay, a well-done burger is good if it's the really thin patties and the condiments are right. A well-done thick burger, forget it. It's like a hockey puck.
No, man, that's not my. That's like one of my least favorite things. Like once you get into the like over 6 ounces and it starts to get well done, it's like it's like cement in your mouth. You're like, I feel like I'm chewing for too long.
How? What is your burger? Is it a private blend?
Here at Roberta's?
Yeah. What, you think I'm going to give it up to you
no,
right
no,
now?
No, come on, but man. Someone has a... Wait, it may have
I
short
got deep IP. I got lawyers working on this shit.
Now. I know it has short rib in it. Or
it does. It does have short rib in it. You're right.
You can taste the short rib.
You can taste the meats in the burger. Well, if it goes overboard, not overboard, if it goes a little bit,
it's actually it's got quite a bit of short rib. That's why you do taste it. But also, like, hey, you know, and I don't want to speak for Carlo, but he was like looking for he wanted it to taste like meat. And I think like sometimes the opposite is said when you're like mixing burger meat. Sometimes people are just trying to get it to like be the carrier of everything else.
Yeah, they're looking for
texture instead of
meat flavor.
But meat flavor. I mean, yeah. Carlo also loves a nice dry aged burger too, which is, you know, another complex flavor that you could add.
I can only eat like half of one of those. Though.
We went to our Kansas City slaughterhouse and he said, "Taste this burger." And we're like, "It's not as good as the burger we buy from you for our mail order customers." He's like, "Everything is the same. It's just the pacifier. The meat was this way. It wasn't this way. It was horizontal instead of vertical, and that changed the taste. I mean, it made the burger not as appealing.
It didn't have hold in the same way too. Yep. The texture completely
Your
changed.
Teeth didn't
the exact
go with it. It's amazing. A good burger is the best. Well, Matt, we got you here from New Jersey,
barely by the skin of your teeth.
Barely.
Let's talk B&T.
24-mile drive
as the crow flies. A minute.
2 hours.
Hour. 40 minutes.
Oh yeah. No, this is not the time to be on the road.
Nah, terrible.
Let's talk B&T. Bridge and tunnel. You actually had to take both to get here. Is there a difference between New Jersey and Long Island bridge and tunnel people? And tell us a little bit about your connection to B&T.
or that you don't want to be associated.
I guess I technically am B&T, right? I do take train or tunnel or
that's true.
Bridge or, but I guess there's always an image in your mind of what B&T looks like.
What is it?
It's funny because that image for me, like it's like still like a 70s image. Like I think of like
mine's Goomba and Blondes.
Yeah, totally. See? Like I still have this like early 80s like mullet guy with a mustache that looks like he drew it on with like eyeliner.
Button up, shirt open, totally open.
Like maybe like an IROC or like a Trans Am or an IROC probably. Yeah.
I see it as a guy in like in a big slow car. He gets into a fight outside the Holland Tunnel. He's all bloody. He's got to go into a bathroom and it's a nice bathroom. So he has a meal there too. He calls the family. They eat there.
What is the 2019 B&T person?
I mean, people who B&T is a Friday, Saturday night phenomenon, right?
You call them aliens.
Only from Long Island and New Jersey.
So on that note, I kind of think like Westchester and Connecticut are, even though they are theoretically the out-of-town people also, they're sort of like removed from this B&T category.
I don't think they are. I think this is, I don't actually think they are because this is the reality of the situation. Most of these people are children of people who probably lived in New York City at some point.
True.
So what happens, right? Like a lot of these people, they come here, they come to New York City, they make their living, they get their stuff, they make a little bit of money, they have some kids, and then they go back out. Like, then those people have kids, and then those kids are like, I want a taste of that life. And that's usually what the B&T crowd is. They're like the kids of people who probably lived here at some point.
Yeah.
And they're looking for their taste of it, too. And then they're going to come here after they get out of high school or college, and they're going to do their time here, and then they're going to move back out. I think the cycle just keeps on continuing. That's the suburbs.
So B&T
that's
people
just
are
New York.
Not negative.
That happens all over the place.
I was going to say, out here in California, we have this concept of the super commuters, which are people who drive more than 2 hours to get to the Bay Area for a job. And some of these people are, you know, literally the working class people that make the Bay Area work because they can't afford to live here. So they live way out in the valley and they drive several hours to get here.
Wait, one accident. What's way out in the valley? Come on, bud.
I'm serious. Like Vallejo? Modesto and stuff like
oh,
that.
Oh, Modesto.
Like,
yeah.
Stockton and, yeah, you know, Stockton. These yeah, places that are like
so
hours
it's interesting.
Away.
You're skewing towards more of like the working class in your B&T yeah. thought or mentality.
Definitely.
For me, it's a little bit of, as you said, the Friday, Saturday night people who maybe are coming to like the clubbier restaurants or like Matt used to work at Del Posto.
Oh, yeah.
I think, and I was going to segue here to post Labor Day, pre Labor Day, but like that clientele changes, I think.
Well,
is there
well,
a lot more
sure.
B&T?
Here's the different dynamic between California, between Eric's reality and our reality is there when you get money, you move closer to this stuff. Like it's more expensive closer, like so Marin and San Francisco itself, or even, you know, even Indeed. Oakland at this point. Here, the difference is you make some money and you're like, ah, I'm going to go live in Long Island where I could get this huge house, or I'm going to live
you
in
go
New Jersey.
Out.
I'm going to,
yeah,
like, I'm getting the fuck out of here. Like, I don't have to deal with this shit anymore. Like, like, it doesn't, I don't have to live in garbage. So a lot of times the opposite happens. You make a little bit of money and you're like, I'm going to go live this like nicer life. I'm going to get out of here. Give my kids a better school, like, you know, a little bit of room to run around. So yeah. then I think that's
a place
the,
where they're like,
those
Daddy,
are the kids.
I want to go to the pharmacy. Can you drive me?
Those are the kids Daddy, that we're, those are the kids that we're getting. We're not getting the like working class parents
right.
kids, right? We're getting the yeah. the children yeah. of
the, ones,
the privileged
yeah.
who are like expect, you know, they're like, you know, they're expected everything. They know what they want. They probably have a little sense of entitlement.
I'm fascinated and I can't make any intelligent conclusions about it by cultures and communities that live right next to a massive gravitational pull. So like Canada, Mexico, New Jersey, Long Island, they're right on the edges of like Manhattan and all that. So
Canada
like,
as a whole country.
He's like, Canada just has to sit there and look at us. Mexico too. They're just sitting around looking at America being like,
no,
we're so close to this gravitational pull. How do we get out of it?
I know. I mean, it's an Americanized thing. I mean, they have NBA franchises and all that, but I mean, to be near, I think Long Island is an interesting community. It's millions and millions of people who live right next to Manhattan on the other side. At least in Jersey, they're still connected to the rest of the country. Long Island is like a cocoon. It's weird. Anyway. Sorry, I have
but
no
then
conclusions
about
it.
What about Staten Island?
Wow, so that Island. So that was my question. To me, they're kind of B&T also.
Staten Island is,
firemen and police.
Have you ever hung out in Staten Island?
No.
It's like, pretty awesome.
Yeah? It's very suburban.
Great pizza.
Snug Harbor, great pizza.
I've gone to the beaches there because they're like not that's you know it's not as crazy usually in the summertime.
Then
you
there's
go
that
to
old
like,
yeah. was it Jamestownville, the old like village from 18 something that they barely touch. And I went to a jug band there and like it was like 6 degrees outside and there was one little stove
from the streets of Shaolin.
And you're just freezing. Listen to a jug band drinking cider. It's like the weirdest thing, but it's. Like only in Staten Island would you probably find that.
Yeah.
I guess, I don't know.
Yeah. But that's actually, so certain communities, when they make some money, it is like, I'm going to go buy a big house in Staten Island and have the city there when I want it. And Jersey and all its, you know, Jersey Shore beaches when I want it. But like, I'm going to have a big house and I'm going to show my money. I don't know.
Well, there's also what do you call them? Bennies is what they call them on the Jersey Shore. Is that
totally.
Right?
Totally.
Well, I don't remember what it stood for. It's like before Essex County something. Like.
Oh, really?
I think it was an acronym. Yeah. I thought
it was just an insult. You know, it's like,
maybe it was an insult.
People live down there.
Maybe
I always thought
both.
There was an acronym.
Well, yuppie was an insult, too. And that was definitely an acronym.
That was an insult. So, hey, we're developing the world's best buffet here on The View. I mean, the main course OG. What are your two most important buffet stations?
Funny you might ask, Whoopi.
No, that's Joy.
Joy, that's right.
Behar.
Sorry.
So what are your two or three most important buffet stations in a buffet? Like, you're creating the world's best buffet.
Boy.
Is it breakfast, brunch, dinner?
Dinner.
What are we talking here?
Dinner.
A dinner buffet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not breakfast.
Dinner buffet. Well, you got to have some kind of pasta dish in there, right?
No, I think
that's
a
like
huge
essential.
Brandon, can we get
I'm a prime rib. I'm a prime rib
thumbs
guy.
Thumbs down on that one. A prime rib, I'm good.
That was so Alabama.
I was definitely going to throw in like a Porkle egg and cheese station. My friends had that at their wedding at like 1 a.m. and it was there was a line.
Oh, I'm into that.
It was awesome.
Any late night food provided at weddings. I'm into that.
You guys brought up pork roll. I gotta mention this. I found this thing the other day. Are you familiar with Ivan Ramen Slurp Shop
on
11th Avenue? And they have this julienne pork roll on their ramen. Did you see that? It's
pork roll
that I've never seen before. I just kind of Googled pork roll the other day and came across it.
Eric, I think you need to come visit and drown yourself.
Julienne pork
in...
roll. I think I actually have seen it, and he has it at some other ones too. He has many ramen shops.
All right, so would you have a ramen station at the world's best buffet?
I would have also a very fast cocktail bar. A massive prime ribs. If I could only have two stations, I would want control of that. I hope someone would take on a charcuterie station, but I have to leave that to someone else. Quick cocktails, not where you have to wait 15 minutes to get a drink.
There's just something about a buffet that automatically makes me think that it could never be the best just because it's a buffet. Yeah. You're just like, it's just... Like, we're starting from last place here.
And then mediocre.
Yeah, and then we're, like, working our way up to something that's, like, halfway edible.
That people have to walk to.
But does
Grace.
Buffet mean it's pre-made, or can things be made to order quickly, as you say, Patrick?
Like a little chef.
But then it's not
a
buffet.
I know, but I love egg stations at breakfast buffets.
Yeah, but they have to be, like, made to order. Let's talk about egg stations here. Right. Like, we're talking about a buffet. I think it's, like, shape. It's, like, the
chafing dishes,
it's like on sterno.
Yeah.
All right. So
can we have a carving station?
Yeah, that's what I meant with Brandon with the prime rib, massive carving station. Guys,
yeah, we need
big thick slices.
I'll be honest with you, like all of the buffets that I remember going to, like I'm usually just going straight to the carving station. I'm like usually finding bread and going straight to a carving
and
station
make a little sandwich, yeah.
And like horseradish, seeing if they got like horseradish uh-huh. And I'm like, I'm just making sandwiches. Yeah. Like,
that's as you walk by, like pasta overcooked, broccoli is gray, it's not green anymore.
Exactly.
You just keep going.
Exactly. Almost everything else, you want it to be made fresh. It's like, I don't want vegetables.
The best
buffet,
to me, if I had to do one, is churrascarias, those Brazilian ones. Those buffets are out. Hearts of palm, shrimp, great. And there's high volume, so people are eating a lot of it. It's
I love
like
that at the churrascaria, you just mentioned the two non-meat items.
Well, you know what's funny is, you're right. Like, those are the best items. Like, pickled things.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, things that are already, like, preserved in a way where they're not going to, like, their freshness isn't, like, you're not worried about. So, jardinera, like, things like that, you're probably, are your best things to have out there.
So, for the chefs in the room, or, you know, me, just a good eater, what's the one ingredient you absolutely cannot skimp on? The thing that must be top of the line for your menu always. Is it a certain spice, a certain ingredient? Matt?
Dry pasta.
Dry pasta.
Yes.
Oh, really? You can't skimp on that.
No, it has to be. We get it from wherever I've been. We use Marcelli imports it, and it's either Zaccagni or Masiarelli. By far the best I've had. I mean, Felicetti is really good too.
So no matter what the price, you're just like, well, I guess the price went up. I'm still buying it.
Don't care.
It is true. There's a significant drop off from like really good pasta to just like kind of what you can get from
because you can
any
cook
purveyor.
DiCecco perfectly. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But it's still DiCecco.
It's still DiCecco, and it's dried too quick, and it's smooth, and it just
lacks texture.
Yeah,
it like doesn't have any like real pasta texture.
We bought a pasta by the case from Renato at Buy a Pasta. Yeah, because the other pastas were just so terrible. What about you guys at Roberta's? Is there one thing, item that where food cost does not matter? You're just paying it.
Well, there's probably two, right? Like flour. You can't skimp on flour. Like everything we do here is done with flour. Like both in the pizzeria and the bakery. And the other thing would be cheese curd, because like the quality of the curd is the quality of the mozzarella. So like when you're making mozzarella, if you're skimping anywhere down that process, like it's going to be bad. I would say those are the two things. I mean, you know, we don't skimp anywhere. Meat especially. It's like,
the crucial things
for us is definitely the I mean, that's what we make our living off of.
It's funny with us, if someone has a very rare breed, like so rare that we're like, oh my God, you raise that Barbados lamb on pasture? Just ship us 10. They're like, you want to know the price? We're like, we don't care. We need 10 or
15.
Patrick's
answer to this question is just breed. That's what he's like. Well, no, we'll do it.
I I really think that the meat makes can make or break a meal, seriously. We were just talking about how we went to this one place and we had this great chicken sandwich, right? And the chicken sandwich the first time was awesome. But then the next time we went back, like, we got one little piece that was, like, a little bit grizzly or something. And then we were like, you know what? That sandwich wasn't that good. And we didn't end up going back there again. So it's kind of like, you know, I don't know. Yeah, if meat I have can one make experience with the meat, I'm, like, worried.
So what is your favorite meat-focused cuisine? If you had to pick a meat-focused cuisine to eat a lot of, barbecue, churrascaria, steakhouse, Mongolian barbecue, which I know is Emily's, burger joint, hot dog cart, like, what's your favorite, like, 100% meat meal?
I think it's got to be barbecue for me.
Certain, yeah, what certain kind? Style?
I'm really into the Carolina. I love the vinegar.
Oh, me too. That's my favorite.
But there's not
I would mine wouldn't be I'm like I would probably go like you know the Argentinian like yeah
steak on an open fire pit.
Yeah, it's like steak with a side of sausage and like maybe some sweetbreads and like blood sausage. It's like, and then maybe there might be room for a potato or something in there. But just like maybe, you know, meat with,
then,
a side
then,
of, meat with a side of meat
just to
nap.
Help digest. So now no, you're going to say Mongolian Grill. You and Dennis, whenever a Mongolian Grill opens, you're there wherever it is in the country.
Yesterday I was telling Patrick that my husband Dennis is very devastated that all of the, actually in New Jersey and in I think it was Millburn, there used to be this place called like JP Lee's, and he was trying to take me there for 10 years, and I refused, and then it closed, and he's been talking about it ever since. But all the like stir fry, you know, make your own, you pick from a buffet, as we've spoken of buffets all day, you pick from a buffet and you put your vegetables and your raw poultry and everything, and then you give it to the guy, right? And you pick your sauce, and I don't know, maybe there's a reason that not many of them exist anymore, maybe there was health hazards, but Patrick and I were saying there used to be like the back of delis in the city, you could do the like make your own stir fry.
Maybe
all
there was.
There's a reason why that doesn't exist anymore. I guarantee you.
Yeah.
The Mongolian Grill was big.
Mongolian barbecue was a chain too. We had it in Ann Arbor. It was all over the Midwest.
You figured that we're going to.
I'm
going
to guess that Eric's is hot dogs, like dirty dogs.
Oh.
He's just like,
you know,
full on hot dog dude.
That's so funny. I was going to give a shout out to chili, you know, because I recently had a chili dog. You know,
just
I was like,
chili.
Wait,
that's your favorite.
There could have been a bean or an onion in there, so that might have violated the whole thing. So I don't know.
That's your favorite meat focused cuisine, chili.
Oh,
on anything?
Yeah,
it's kind of amazing.
Well, I mean, you could do so much with chili. I thought,
yeah, you
it was
put it on a hamburger,
you know?
Put it on a hot dog, put it on nachos.
That's such a hard question. You guys always put me on the spot with these questions. I mean, God.
Hey, we give a rough outline the day before. You should be ready with these.
That doesn't mean I could you know, discern an answer. But, yeah, it's okay.
All right, well, I'll how about this question that you've probably never thought about ever? So Matt, our guest here, likes to hike and goes hiking in New Jersey,
sure,
with his dog and his son and maybe your wife,
right,
too. What's your ideal hiking food?
It's much easier with just the dog.
Just the dog.
Yeah.
Okay. Hiking
I hope
food?
You're going to say hot soup.
I know that feeling.
Hot soup. Probably like a beer and some like almonds or something. Like something
a
easy.
A beer.
Something
all
you can
right
just carry around. And, you know, the dog yeah likes to go and just chase the ball. And bring, she's very good. She brings it back. You throw it, bring it back. Like just,
what kind of dog?
Yeah, my kids don't
some
do
some kind
that
of mutt. We adopted her from Brooklyn Badass Animal Rescue.
Oh, that's actually the name of the company?
Yeah.
Brooklyn Badass?
Badass Animal. No, it looks like she might be like a whippet and oh, okay, something else. She's like 52 pounds, cool. Very muscular. And, you know, she's a little crazy, but she was a rescue dog. I mean,
dude, is there a DNA in me or DNA 23 for dogs?
Probably.
Like,
why not? There should be.
Honestly,
I think you better get on that right away. But
what if you submitted the saliva sample and just like didn't tell 23 and me you were sending back
a dog sample?
A
I'm
dog
like,
sample.
And Sniffy is not from Scotland. He has no Scottish roots.
I think we should do that. At least we should send
that
in. That'd one
be
animal.
Interesting experiment. Yeah, totally.
Just
so we're taking
swap
one answer on this round.
All right,
round
your,
table.
What's your answer?
I agree. I think nuts. I think
like, I'm nuts.
I'm not yeah as much on the almonds. I'd probably be a cashew or a mixed bag of nuts.
It's just but, you just put them in your pocket.
Trail
yeah
mix.
Yeah, trail mix. Yeah. You just need something that like that you're not like bringing your like your thermos in your backpack with your.
I'm
you
bringing
know, your
hot soup. I'm bringing this
soup
massive heavy contraption that
a,
I carry
really
out, and then we
on
have
a hike?
Communal soup for hikes and huh mountain climbing. I think a hot soup.
A
you
get
you really look like
first
a mountain
all
climber.
First of all, I guarantee Patrick's never mountain climbed ever. And what he considers mountain climbing, most people just call a walk.
Park Slope.
Well, and probably some beef jerky, you know.
Great call.
Get right to your,
has anything changed? That's our last question, then we'll go to break. But has anything really changed in Labor Day? I mean, somehow there's this rite of passage, Labor Day, everything's starting, it's the holidays.
Patrick dared me to wear white today.
I want to say no, but I think it's huge, like psychologically. Yeah.
It's a major cultural shift at the Jersey Shore. My parents live down there.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's like a light switch, dude. It's like 100,000 people leave on one day.
Why? It's global warming. It's like 100 degrees here.
I know, right? That's why it's based on school.
It's based on school. It's almost all primarily based on school. People have to go back. Also, like jobs are more lenient on like what the hours are, especially in August. Yeah. Like all of August, people are just like more lenient on their workers and all this stuff. And then September hits, and everyone expects that you're back to the shit. It's like,
well, and they expect
there's a wall because everyone needs you to come back. It's that time. Everyone's back in school. Things get busy. Restaurants get busy. Everything gets busier in September. So you're just expected to like fall in line.
There's no more reservations for the bridge and tunnel people, though. After Labor Day.
That's what happens.
Yeah. It's funny. I don't even know why, but I called most of the chefs this week versus just like, or many of them versus.
It's because you were trying to sell a goat for Goat-tober.
Yeah, and there's just all this stuff. I was trying to sell turkeys already. And what about ducks and geese? And even though that's on December 20th, you know, all of a sudden Labor Day signifies the next end.
You're the asshole who starts decorating for the holidays, like
we have a
like,
Christmas
right
sale.
After late, like you're like already putting out the Halloween stuff.
I've already bought your present.
There's already Christmas stuff up.
Did I tell you guys?
Now that's
about,
just
wait,
crazy.
There's a
Newport Mall, Jersey City.
So my brother-in-law,
2020.
They already have Christmas trees.
My brother-in-law works for Macy's corporate, and he's been stationed in Jersey City for the last 2 weeks. They are staging. They use one store per year. It's always this one. I don't think they explain very well to the residents what the hell's going on. There's Christmas music. There are Christmas trees. Every display is Christmas oriented. And now it's up through the rest of the year. Yeah. It's their like store where they do all their testing. They take all the photos to send it out to the rest of the country. But it is Christmas
no
in
Hanukkah?
Jersey City.
Already. So you're not being littered with Hanukkah stuff?
I'll call Sean.
I have to say, good on Hanukkah for not like jumping the gun. You never see like Hanukkah before Ever. Thanksgiving.
No, you don't hear
the dreidel song.
No, it just doesn't happen. It's like you don't see everything like littered in blue and silver before like November. It's like they wait, like you know, you just gotta hold tight and enjoy your holiday. Maybe it's also because Hanukkah changes.
Maybe it fluctuates a little.
What do you mean it changes?
The dates are not set every year.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's around Christmas-ish.
So, hey, before we go to break, what's on the Alameda Sun cover, your weekly 35,000 circulation newspaper?
Well, I just want to say that the paper coming out this week is going to make something like $13,000 in revenue, which I'm pretty proud of. That's like, you know, well exceeding the minimum amount we need to make to stay open. And
congratulations.
So, like, yeah.
An excellent
Note
week
to
for
self,
us.
Eric
and
is poor.
I have a theory about this, that every year around this time, it just gets busier, and partly, I guess, because school is back in. But you can almost bank on the fact that September and October are going to be the best months of the year for us. And the reason why I think that is, I believe it must have something to do with, like, the harvest. Like, isn't this, like, the most plentiful time of year when
sure
we have
is.
The most stuff or something like that? And so there's a lot more money and, like, you know, stuff to go around.
I thought you were going to equate it to, like, Vogue's September issue. It's always twice as thick as all the other magazines
That's
with
true.
Advertisements.
Right. Well, you know, I wish it could be like that. But our paper hovers around 12 to 14 pages, and it's always been that way. And I just, you know, I don't see my paper getting smaller because I started small, and it only keeps getting bigger. So I keep reversing the trends of everything they say in all of the mainstream media by just slowly, incrementally increasing my tiny little newspaper. And last week I got 6 new subscribers.
That's great.
Which for me is unusual.
So the front page says September rules.
Is that it?
September 12th. No, I'm sorry. Okay, so front page, what can I give you? We had a guy who was actually in the NFL living here in Alameda who was arrested for stealing cell phones.
Whoa, who was it? What was his name?
He was on the Colts most recently.
He sounds like a cornerback, a defensive player. He's picking things off.
You need to get him off your fantasy team, Brandon.
Right away.
Isaiah Langley, just released by the Colts because he was arrested.
You lose him, and you lost
Alameda
Antonio
Police
Brown.
Department. Was part of it. Yeah, and the Antonio Brown thing, that's even better because the guy who's going to replace Antonio Brown on the Raiders.
Keelan Doss from Alameda.
Keelan Doss is an Alameda native.
It's amazing. What a great story.
Are you picking him up for your team?
I might.
I have a feeling he might not be as good as AB. He might be a better person, but.
All right.
He is a fantastic player. He's probably not as good as AB, but this is a great story. This is a young kid out of Alameda that's like getting a chance to play on his like team that he grew up being a fan of. It's always a good story when you get a local kid that gets to like show up and show out for his family and his friends.
And meanwhile, Belichick and Brady and Kraft are showing themselves who they really are.
Like,
they're just always associated with
Patriots equal some sort of like
cheating.
Sexual misconduct.
Yeah, sexual misconduct, cheating.
Right? Yeah.
And Trump.
Yeah,
that's totally. It. The Patriots.
Like, what
Trump
do the Patriots really
misconduct.
Stand for?
Yeah.
They're like, what's your stance on women? Ah, we don't really have
no
a stance
comment.
On women. Yeah,
no comment.
Yeah, no comment.
That's not for us.
And for the record, the Oakland Raiders actually have their practice field here in Alameda. It's within the city borders of Alameda. So a lot of times they report from outside the headquarters of the practice field, and they say, reporting from Alameda. You know, on the news, the TV news.
That's nice. Awesome.
Have you ever been perched out in front of the of the practice facility, just waiting for that one grab of
a butt,
a hot take,
me,
a hot take,
me? AB grabbing some butt?
No, I have dedicated employees who do that kind of thing for me, or volunteers, or whatever. Yeah.
What are you, like the guy from the Heart of Darkness, Marlon Brando, sitting on the throne? I mean, what do you never go out?
I don't chase after ambulances or anything like that. I just sit here in my office and pull my little strings.
That's true. When I saw him, he had the complexion of powder. Remember that movie, Powder?
Oh,
he was completely white. You never get out. You have to get out. Live.
You said it's 100 degrees. Go out in the sun.
Put on an extra thing. Another flannel layer.
We're going to take a quick break. Put your face in the sun for 30 seconds. All right. Stick around. We'll be right back after the break with Matt Ruzga and the Main Course OG.
Are you enjoying this show? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. I'm Luke Griffin, and I'm the host of Bushwick Podcast. Each week, we share the remarkable stories of how artists, activists, and entrepreneurs collide in Bushwick, a special Brooklyn neighborhood that's changing faster by the day. You can find Bushwick Podcast wherever you get your podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Patina Restaurant Group offers unparalleled service in New York's most iconic locations, including Lincoln Center, Rockefeller Center, and Macy's Herald Square. Patina is also the exclusive caterer at Brooklyn Botanic Garden. From meetings and presentations in the glass-walled atrium, to galas in the renovated Palm House, and intimate wedding showers at Yellow Magnolia Cafe, your event will be perfectly imagined and customized at Brooklyn Botanic Garden. You can also enjoy a la carte brunch and lunch at the picturesque Yellow Magnolia Cafe overlooking Lilypool Terrace. Executive Chef Morgan Jarrett's unique menu offers warm, distinctive cuisine with a focus on local vegetables, grains, and sustainably sourced meats and fish.
All right, and we're back. Patrick, were you doing karaoke in the middle of the break?
I did do karaoke time after time in Nashville. You were there, and I think I got great acclaim.
You're really lucky that I didn't send that to our lovely engineer, Matt, play.
Why? Was I not good?
We can play it next week.
Was I good?
But only if we can run the video on the website,
I was
too.
Not good. I can tell.
I hate karaoke.
Oh, really?
So,
hate it. My friends put me on the list once, and I just left the bar.
Oh, really?
Up next is Matt. Like, nope, I'm leaving. Just walked out the door.
So that would be me. Patrick, on the other hand, was a really good sport. This guy in an old dive bar in East Nashville hugged you, welcomed you, said he was excited to have New Yorkers in the house. He told us that Keith Urban and Nicole Kidman had been in this particular bar. It was called Fran's East Side Tavern. Oh, separate times.
I don't know. Were they together?
No, they're married still. Okay. Yeah, they're not divorced. And Patrick sang two songs. All and right. I think when someone puts you on the spot like that, to step up and do it
what
is
was it,
awesome.
Time After Time?
And Midnight Train to Georgia, an ooh, easy one.
Nice. But Midnight Train to Georgia really needed some harmonization. So the guy who ran the like karaoke, you know,
kind of like Eric Koss comes in and saves like a tangent that I'm on. He's like, hey, rein it back in. That guy helped me.
This guy did backup vocals for Patrick. All right, so no nice. Karaoke, but we no are... Karaoke. So I have to say, we are broadcasting live on Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This is the Main Course OG, and we have Matt Ruzga in studio with us. You are the executive chef of the Fox and Falcon in South Orange, New Jersey.
Correct.
And before that, you were at Del Posto as the chef de cuisine.
Executive
sous chef. Yes. I'm sorry.
Yes. I was there. 3 years I was there.
What was it like working at Del Posto, and who were your mentors there, and what did you learn from him or her?
Del Posto is definitely like Disney World. Everything is clean and shiny, and everybody takes care of everything properly, and it's very well manicured. And it's an oil, it's a well-oiled machine. It's been running for, what, 13
yeah,
years
I think
now?
It's 13 14, years.
Something like that, yeah.
And so is that something that you bring to your kitchen, or you think it's only possible there?
We try to keep it clean and tidy. We took over this building from somebody else that had a restaurant before, and I don't think they ever knew what a scrub brush was.
Oh, wow. So it needed some TLC.
A lot of TLC. I think we're still doing the TLC 9 months in. Wow.
So do you have a mentor? Was it someone in culinary school, or like uncle? Or
I have, I guess, two or three. I guess my grandmother lived with us growing up, and she was from Sicily, so she was always cooking at home. And then my high school had a culinary program, and Chef Z, Miss Zaffarana, she just retired this year. She tried to get me to take over for her, but I went and taught one class after school, and I was like, no fucking way, dude. These kids are high school kids. No attention span. Crazy. Yeah. This is how we make pasta, and then 30 kids just disappeared. I don't know where they went.
They're all going through puberty. Yeah.
It was wild.
Do you think when you were in that class, you appreciated it right off the bat, or it's later in life?
I think so. There were a few of us that were really into it, and she said, you guys should go to culinary school. Like, okay, great. That's easy.
So is that what you did? You went to culinary school right away?
Yep, right out of high school.
All right.
Next, who's the third?
Good thinking. Definitely Ladner, for sure.
Really?
Yeah. I was working at Lupa as a cook.
Oh, wow.
And he would come in. It was Steve Connington. Yeah, he was there, and then Cruz came and took over.
Wow.
And then Mark would just kind of like randomly show up on Sundays by himself and make me make pasta and tell me how shitty it was. And then I would have to remake it, and he would tell me what I did wrong or what I did right, and he would just keep going and going and going and going. And then randomly hanging out with like Cesare and Kevin Garcia at like Takashi for some reason. Like, why do you keep calling me to hang out with you? I don't understand.
You're good. Your pasta was not too shitty. And it was just
I'm pretty sure
shitty.
At like 4 a.m. on a park bench drinking out of a brown paper bag. He was like, you remind me of me when I was young. You're like a little pompous fuck. But you don't show anybody. You don't say it. You just do the work. You just do the work and you shut up. That was Jersey, right?
Is that in Jersey?
No, that was in Manhattan.
That was in Manhattan. On a park bench at 4 a.m. And then then he moved you over to Del Posto?
And then I went there, and I was only there for a couple months the first time, and then it was bad timing for me. Not the right time for me to be there. And then I went on to the Danny Meyer world and did Milino and opened up Marta with Chef Nick and then went back to Del Posto.
There's a connection there, Chef Nick, with their kind of fast casual restaurants in Mark Ladner.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's your management style like? With your team, how big is your team at Fox and Falcon front and back?
Front and back? I think we have 8 cooks in the kitchen.
Wow.
So small. Like one prep guy.
Sounds like a
two
lot.
Two dishwashers.
We had a guy on last
compared
week.
Compared to last
alone.
Week's guy. Yeah.
It's last like, week. It's like 10 seats, 12 seats.
Yeah, exactly.
Wild.
So yeah, you're big compared to that.
Yeah. There are also 180 seats at Fox and Falcon. There's 3 bars on 2 floors.
And are you the owner?
No. David Massoni.
Okay.
And who had all the Talde
Well, I see. Yeah, what's your management style like? So you're sitting there and talking to your team of eight or team of what, 30 altogether?
Yeah, 30. Yeah, I guess 30 altogether. Yeah, with front of the house. I grew up in the world of where the yelling was kind of like still happening in the kitchen, and I just always saw no one responding very well to it. So it's like, I'm never going to be a yeller. I hate that. And yeah, just like firm talking, you know, not like you're terrible, you suck. Wow, it's just like, this is why you do it this way. Like a little more coaching than, and more like buddy than like talking down to. Because then you get more out of the person.
Berating was the best way to increase morale.
For sure.
Yeah, I always figure a good berating.
No, I think really that, and does that, do people stick works, around? Yeah. Do people learn and grow?
It's the same people for the past 9 months, basically, yeah.
That's great. Yeah. So how is clientele different in New Jersey than in New York? Now, granted, as we were talking before with, you know, and we were talking about how all people, once you do well, you leave the city, you have a house in South Orange or Maplewood. And so is that the New York City day workers going home at night and coming to your restaurant?
Definitely. Yeah. I do notice that no one actually eats in that. I don't think they know what courses are in New Jersey. It's just like, I'll have this with this. Like, well, you know, it's going to, you know, you just ordered a pork chop that's 20 ounces. Well.
Right, right.
So you're going to wait for your meatballs and your pork chop for like an hour and a half.
Right. Can we suggest a salad to start you off or a cheese plate?
Wow, that's interesting.
They're very like, I want this. And they'll sit there and they'll just wait.
But they're patient.
As if like you go out in New York, you're like, all right, so we're going to have these three things to start. Bottle this, maybe a couple cocktails.
Is that because people like need to be home by a certain time? They're in a rush.
I think it might be because it's a big community of. Because
then you get all your food at the last possible moment versus eating it incrementally. Yeah. Is your menu still divided by app and main?
We have it sectioned off as app, pasta, mains. So but it's still like you try to suggest it. Some people get it, which is good. But I think it's also everybody that, like you said, moved out from mostly Brooklyn. Almost all of our friends, they're from, I lived in Williamsburg. You're like, me too.
Are they more discerning in New York or in New Jersey or anything? Nothing like that, right? Same food?
Same food. Yeah, they're just, there's something weird about them, but it's busy, which is great.
Busy is good. Post Labor Day is good.
Like they want everything quickly because they usually have like babysitters or their kids are at home or they're trying to eat before their kids get home from whatever practice they have.
Well, yeah, it's probably not
you know?
As many young couples where they can stay out till 11 on a Wednesday. Yes.
I watched The Gilded Age they was talking about the Astors and the Carnegies, and Astor threw a very big party, Vanderbilt threw a very big party. Everyone had to be invited. 400 guests were invited. And you know what time it started? 11 p.m.
What?
And I do think people, and I always believe that my mom went out later. She would come home at 1 o'clock, 12 o'clock, even if I was with her and be out with her friends or whatever, if it was one of those nights like that I was out. I don't think we got home at 10. We got home at like midnight, 1 o'clock, and you know I might be playing or falling asleep at the table. Yeah, I mean, it was very civilized. Now today, 9:30.
Well, that's more the European way.
Also, post theater, everyone went out. Oh, half the theater would fill 30 restaurants. Now, post-theater, they won't.
No, the pre-theater is where 47th Street is packed.
In the
every
old days,
restaurant
it was reverse.
Is busy from 5:15 to 6:50.
Here's our order. We've got to be out by 6:30. Okay.
People used to stay out later. You know, this desire to race home and definitely be asleep by midnight. Like, what's up? Sometimes you might go to sleep at 2. I always say, if you don't come like crawling home drunk at least once a year, something's wrong with
once
you.
Once a year.
You're living to or so much food that you have to fall asleep like on the toilet. No, but just you have to be a glutton sometimes, and you don't have to live even 365 days a year. You just have to average even at the end of the year. So you go on a diet, eat nothing for a month. That's fine too.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, what would you say is your most original moment in the kitchen? I guess through
does it
the
have
lens
to be
of a dish.
Gluttony?
No. It could be something refined.
Man, I don't know. Is anything original?
Have you ever done something that is your, I don't want to call it, signature, something you just did particularly well? Or it came easy
like
to
Julian
you?
Pork roll, for
Julian
example.
Pork roll. I feel like Mark and I did make pork roll. Oh, yeah. I thought we spent like 4 months just making it for no reason. Because he was like, I don't know what it is. Like, what? I had to go buy some for him. He's like, this is so fucking salty. I'm like, all right, we'll make our own. And then it went nowhere. But
So, yeah, I mean, if there's nothing, I mean, it's hard to say original, but is there a...
What are you the best at? What would you say you average a 95 on when you make it then versus an 85?
I would say any pasta cookery is my thing, I think, okay. is what I've really, like, grabbed
onto.
And
it's hard to be a good pasta.
Like, sometimes where do people go wrong in pasta? What are some of the chief ways?
Timing, too much sauce, not enough sauce. Not enough salt and water.
Not a good ingredient.
Not a good pasta. Not the good ingredients. For sure. That was one of the Landers things. He was like, this is good, but it could be better with better ingredients. He's like, God damn, I can't do anything right.
Yeah, but that's how you learn. That's a mentor.
That's right.
I'm sorry. You guys have to ask Matt your famous question, the Meghan Markle question.
All right. Well, to round out the show.
Oh, God. Who is Meghan Markle?
The Duchess.
Not the German chancellor who won chef. Was like, I would feed her dumplings and Kraffen. And
all right, we go to the next show, because there's someone up at 11, Meghan Markle was just in town to watch her friend Serena Williams play at the U.S. Open. So we wanted to ask you, if it was up to you, a single bite, what would you feed
that
her courtside?
That you can eat while watching
courtside,
the game.
Yes.
Courtside.
Ooh, it would have to be like highbrow-lowbrow combo, like a
cake caviar
cod
and
potato
a
chip with sour cream and caviar on it. You know, something like that.
All right, we knew we liked you.
Nice. Best answer I've heard yet.
Yeah. Oh, right. That was an ace.
Oh.
Why would you say you love that answer? That's calling it a zero in tennis. Why would you do that, Eric? Love
Come
means zero. What you wanted to say is he aced.
I didn't know we were. What?
Don't you know the tennis lingo? I spent 5 hours watching Nadal on Sunday night. I was exhausted by the time the match was over.
The correct would have been like. After he said that, advantage
match. Yes. Yeah, all right.
Well played. All right. Match point.
All right. Let's call a deuce. I mean, a truce.
Well done.
Sorry. Right.
Oh, yeah. Footfall.
All right, everyone. We are. We will see you next week. Stick around for A Taste of the Past up at 11. Chef Matt, thanks so much for joining
thanks
us.
Thank you,
Chef. The Main Course OG is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.